or if you're going to go to a nursing home where the low-hanging fruit is in the funeral industry. That's what I call it, though.
Inside joke. So it sounds like you had a crazy week last week dealing with a unique situation as a funeral director. So, Melissa, why don't you tell us a little bit about the scenario you found yourself in last week?
I got a call to assist with a farewell and burial of a horse. And I'm in a rural area. So the farmers out here do typically bury their horses. This was a widow that needed help all the way. Like, she needed us to find access to a tractor and or whatever, the backhoe. Yeah. And she wanted it to be sentimental and, like, she wanted help. She wanted more guidance than what the typical farmer may have wanted. So the horse had been euthanized on her property on a blanket. Out in the pasture where it was going to be buried, so they didn't have to tote it very far. And the day before is when we arranged for finding the person with the backhoe. And so the grave was already dug. That didn't have to be done while we were just sitting around waiting for the, you know, the lady to be ready to let her horse go. Underneath the blanket, we had kind of like, imagine backboards for humans. Except it's grande size. So we had something plastic like that with a bit of a cup to it that had been wedged underneath with straps so that it could be pulled and then delivered into the grave. Very interesting. I didn't stay for that part.
Yeah, I was gonna say, is there a loud thud that happens in this situation, or what happens?
I would assume unless they took the straps back around and hooked them up to the backhoe and lowered it in. I'm kicking myself for not staying for that part, and I will have to circle back and get that conversation from the folks that were involved. But we adorned his face with flowers. She had some goats that came by and were with her. And they said goodbye to the horse, too. And then some kids from next door came by and brought flowers and put them on the horse. And they did the whole mane and the tail cut and... They're looking at memorial, like the Victorian memorial jewelry from Wisp Adornments. And they're looking at that. That's pretty cool. They could make a whole wreath. They could make a whole wreath, a vest, if they wanted to, with all that hair.
I'm sure. Wow, it sounds like a beautiful send-off. And obviously, it all depends on the situation and your care for whatever you love. And that's part of what we do as funeral directors, is like, we're going to help you get through that process. No matter what way you're grieving for whoever it is, we're going to do that. So how did they find you, and what was your role overall in the situation?
So while the End Foundation is working to get established as the funeral home, I launched Pet Funeral Care, the End Companion Care. So I'm currently offering water cremation and assistance with burial, or also what I call angel guide visits, where if the person can't take their pet to the end of life appointment at the vet, be it too heartbreaking or just can't be there, or if they want somebody to be there with them to comfort them or bring the other animals to these appointments, that's what I'm doing currently while we get everything off the ground.
That's great. Well, for anyone that didn't listen to our previous episode, we had one a bit back. Melissa is the founder, and she runs the End Foundation, which their aspiration is to have the first ever nonprofit funeral home, is what they're looking at, and green natural burials and a whole lot of other fun things. So if you haven't listened to that episode, you got to go back and check it out. Today, we're talking a little bit different. Today we're talking dogs. So we started with our horses. Now we're talking dogs. Melissa has a lot of experience with dogs in the funeral home and all the different type of verbiage and how we can use those in what we do as funeral directors. So if you want to give us a little bit of a synopsis on what your background is in this situation as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so many people know me with Kermit the dog alongside me. Kermit the dog is a border collie Aussie mix that I adopted when he was 4 or 5 months old. I saw him on petfinder.com when I lived in Austin, Texas, fell in love with the blue eye and the brown eye, drove 3 hours to go adopt him, and the rest is history. Like the first night I had him back, I introduced him to a decedent back at the crematory that we had just gone on a removal. You know, this is what a deceased individual is like. And then went on to find out proper training to see if it would be possible for him to work with me in funeral care. And I've learned a whole lot along the way. So Kermit was the first certified therapy dog in funeral care for the entire state of Texas. Wow. And so from that, we inspired other funeral homes that had dogs at work to actually get their dogs certified, because there's something I learned is there's a big break difference between an emotional support animal, a comfort dog, a therapy dog, and a service animal. And
I feel like a lot of us use those terms and we don't exactly know what is what. So if you wouldn't mind to educate myself and all of everyone that's listening, what are the major differences between those types of animals to help, and in what situation do we use each of those?
Yeah, awesome. So a service dog is a dog that is trained to do a task, a medical task or something, to the benefit of its handler. It takes extensive training to have these bomb-proof dogs. It is the highest step you can have other than, you know, like a, yeah, that is the highest step. That is it. Just below that is a therapy dog. Therapy dogs have at least 6 months of training for the first part. So here's kind of the way that, let me just spit out. We'll go into that in a minute. Okay. So therapy dog is the next step down. They are trained to work in a public setting. They can be insurable. They also are bomb-proof in their attitude and their public behavior. They do not do any medical related tasks, and they're not assigned to one individual. They can be touched and handled by the public with permission or by encouragement. Then you go down another one. A comfort dog is somebody's pet that they take into their work situation, or they take into any situation. Like say you're going to Starbucks to meet with all your friends and everybody's going to pet your dog. Your dog's a comfort dog at Starbucks. And they don't even have special training or anything like that. You just are confident enough in their abilities to be around the public that, you know, you can take them out and they're going to behave themselves. They're not going to pee on the carpet. They're not going to bite somebody. They're not going to bark.
You're comfortable with that.
Yeah. Comfort dog. And then the emotional support animal is, I mean, that one gets thrown around a lot. This is how I define it. When I got an emotional support status for Kermit 4 years ago, he met my therapist. He also met my doctor that prescribed medications. So he had to come into the hospital and into the doctor's offices so they could write a note vetting him saying, yes, this dog behaves well. It's not a standard practice. I feel like something like that should be, like emotional support animals should have basics.
Sure.
And get vetted by somebody in order, you know, for people to just take them wherever they do.
Right. That all makes sense. And so that's a good way for us to each have a breakdown of what they all are. And what is, so what does Kermit do, or what has he done in the past in funeral service? And what kind of training did you go through to get that all organized? And
Awesome. So Kermit, he has gone on removals with me. Prior to COVID, he used to go into the hospitals and would be at the nurse's station unless invited in by the family. So he'd be comforting the nurses while I'd be with the family, and he'd follow the cot out. After COVID hit, things were a whole lot different. And so we have not reintroduced that at all. I'm sure in certain markets it could work out, especially, well, we'll get to that. But so then other things he does, he works at graveside services. He's worked church services. When I've worked at a corporate funeral home, he was kind of there for all the staff. His biggest thing is he can nail down, and most dogs are like this, they can nail down who is hurting the most in the room, and they will gravitate. They always
have that sense, right? Yes. They know when you're sick and they can tell who is struggling the most. It's unbelievable. It's uncanny.
It's crazy. The most memorable experience I have is I was sitting with a family, and this was like his first year in after being a therapy dog. The widow would not speak. She was hunched over. She just was not okay. You know, the shutdown, the total shutdown. The family was encouraging her to talk and communicate. She wouldn't communicate. They saw the picture of Kermit on the wall that said, you know, therapy dog available, ask staff if you'd like to meet him or something like that. And they asked if we could meet Kermit. So I go get Kermit. Kermit comes in the room. He makes his way around the table. He's greeting everybody. And he kind of pauses next to her. He notices she's not going to move, and he moves around the table to everybody else. It's not long before I see her push back from the table, and there's a head in her lap. He's just like this, and her hands are caressing his head. And it wasn't 2 minutes later that she started talking to us and communicating.
Wow.
And he just stayed right there until the appointment was over. He ended up going to her funeral, her husband's funeral service, as well as the burial too. But that was the most memorable interaction I've ever seen him have with a client family.
That is beautiful. And it's so touching, and it went full circle too, to have him there at the funeral service. So that's amazing. What did you do to actually train him for the situations? What did that look like as far as actually training Kermit to do this?
So here's the kicker. If you have this magic dog that's going to be able to do it, because temperament is a huge, huge thing, you want to make sure that they can handle running kids, hugs, hair tugging, rough ears, stuff like that. The first thing we did was our canine good citizenship exam. And to get that, you have to do your basics, your sit, your stay. The most impressive part of the canine good citizenship test that I recall was we had to take the test in a Petco store. And there's online, it'll tell you who's certified to give you these examples or these tests or whatever. Sure. In a Petco store, I had to put him in a sit, stay, and walk away for a minute and a half. Where he could not see me.
Wow.
He had to stay there to pass the test. So that was the most amazing one from that. So he did that. After that, I started doing a little bit more research on what I was going to do next for the next step. Therapy dog teams are all over the United States. So the biggest one is Pet Partners. I'm blanking on the other one. I was going to call it Pet Loss International, but that's not it. But if you look up therapy dog teams, international therapy dog teams or something like that, it'll show you different organizations that can train you and your dog to get that certification, to hit that marker, and then be able to do those things. And at that marker, your dog is insurable up to $1 million for incidents and accidents. So if he were to trip an old person at the grave and they fell over, he's insured. If he were to bite a cat that's running by, we're insured. That's the huge, huge thing.
Yeah.
The achievement of that takes care of that part. So what they do is when you get in, like we went with Austin Dog Alliance, which was in the Texas area when we did it at the time. So they have to be a year old before you can enroll them. To take the test. So he started at 8 months taking the exam training part. And then when he hit a year old, we went ahead and tested a month early and he passed. So I was able to say, you know, at a year and a month old that he was a certified therapy dog. And then from there, you have to continue on your training because there's different levels as to whether or not they'll let you go to a school with elementary kids to do, you know, reading with kids, bow wow reading. Or if you're going to go to a nursing home where the low-hanging fruit is in the funeral industry. No. That's what I call it, though. But yeah, you can go to nursing hospitals. All that stuff.
Yeah. Wow, that's cool. That's amazing that you're able to do that at such a young age, too, and you know, get him to do that. It's just a wonderful thing. So actually at the funeral home, what percent of families do you think were interested in having him around, or was it just something that you, like you said, for the previous family that he was on the wall and they just approached you once in a while? Or well, what did that look like when you were at a larger funeral home, and what percent of families that were interested in having him around?
when we went to a larger funeral, now I'll say when we were at smaller funeral homes in Texas, most of the people knew him because of my social media presence or anything like that. So I'd say 90% of the time he was invited along. Or families would, I had two families ask him to come to their home on the removal.
Amazing.
So the larger firms, the first one that I had interaction with was in Seattle, and the majority of the clientele was Vietnamese. So I didn't get a whole lot of people asking. So it was probably 25% of the folks in Seattle. And then when I went out to Tacoma, it was even less, like 20%, because that was a corporate funeral home where there were so many directors and we were rotating in and out of families so quick. But I would say maybe 80% of my families that had gravesides elected for him to be there. But not 80% of the entire caseload.
Right. Just the burials. Yeah. No, that makes sense. And do most funeral homes, not just the ones that you're at, but like overall, if you know, is that something that's just free of charge from a funeral home, or do you typically have a charge? This is something I don't know anything about at all.
You know, I've heard different things. I never charged for it. But people have implied that this is something that is charged for on my social media. And I'm like, how could you do that? What I think it could be is it could be an outstanding organization, a separate organization that is volunteering their time and services. And then that GPL, general price list line item for a therapy dog is actually going to that nonprofit. Possibly. I've never made money on doing the therapy work with him, but man, you see that TikTok that goes, I got to make money. I got to figure out how to make money.
Of course.
I don't know. I just tell everybody. I'm doing it.
Yes, exactly. Good luck. Yeah. Have fun with that. It seems like it's a bigger and bigger thing. I know when I first started as a funeral director, I really didn't hear about any sort of therapy dog, anything like that to begin with. So, but now it seems like it's becoming more prevalent, and I know families love it all the time. Whenever they have that situation, I'm sure they're crazy about it. So do you see this as a thing that's going to increase over time or along the funeral industry? I think it's just another beautiful service that we can give to a family just out of the goodness of our hearts and say, here's something to help you through this tough time. So where do you see therapy dogs going in funeral service overall?
Already in the last 6 years that we've been doing this, I've seen leaps and bounds. Like they've started bringing them to the NFDA or ICCFA and things like that. It's going to be more of a mainstream thing, if not just dogs, therapy cats, therapy family members. The pets are family now. And as families are running, you know, smaller funeral entities or, you know, their own things, they're going to bring them in. They're part of the family. But I think the access for everybody, because you can't, not everybody's going to have a bomb-proof dog that's going to be great for this. But what you can do is partner with the nonprofit in your area and have them come in, like I kind of stated earlier, and then still provide, not only are you networking with a nonprofit in your area, but you're also providing that service and networking them to every one of those family members that comes in.
Yes.
That service.
Absolutely. That seems to be like the most logical way to go about those things. And it gives access to more and more funeral homes, especially smaller firms. Like that's a big daunting task to go through all the things that you did with Kermit to get all of your certifications. So in order to have this accessible for smaller funeral homes, maybe we have nonprofits that are out there that are offering this, and it's a great thing for families. And it's just a win-win for everyone involved.
Yeah. I see it becoming more mainstream. I hope it does. You know, all the animals, all the cuddlies.
Yeah. What about people that are allergic or don't like dogs or cats? Like, do you ever see a family bicker? Have you ever seen a family bicker? Like, I don't like cats or I don't like dogs. And like, they don't want this situation. And you know how it happens. Like families in our service line, they tend to bicker a lot.
I will say, so part of the thing of being a therapy dog is your dog has to have like regular grooming and coat maintenance. So one of the comments that I get frequently from anybody that's interacted with Kermit is how soft he is. typically the allergens come from the dander, which is the skin flakes on the dog. So if you've got a really clean dog and you're not a, you know, you keep your business clean, then I have not noticed a problem. Families, I've had some that are like, I don't like dogs, I don't want to be around them, but they've never interacted. Like, I mean, it's no more than like, as long as you're cleaning your business, it's no more than having dog hair on your jacket or your pants.
Exactly. Yeah, that makes sense. And what about, have you ever been in that situation where a family argued over this matter? I'm interested in if you ever had that.
Yeah. So we had a grumpy Gus that left a bad review on the Googles for a funeral home that I worked at because of the dogs that were at the cemetery at his mother's burial. They were digging underneath graves or under bushes and they had pooped and he saw the poop and we reached out to the family and what it was, I told him that's not dog poop. That's bear poop. So he had identified bear poop. And because one of the dogs that was owned by the gravedigger was a senior dog, it was underneath a bush by a grave, but they weren't acting a fool, but that guy was really bad, but his wife made him take the review down.
Well, there you go. That's nice. You always, you never know who you're going to come across. And sometimes that's just the way it goes. Okay. We're going to transition a little bit here. We're going to talk about the End Foundation. Tell us where you're at with your process and what are the future things that we have coming to see out of you with your foundation.
All right. So we have kind of figured out Patreon. So we're inviting people to join and support our Patreon for as little as $1 a month. But if you move up to a $5 tier or a $9 tier, you start getting goodies mailed to you. And that's the really fun part. But for as little as $1 a month, you could support the End Foundation in providing education, support, and funding for those advancing a more symbiotic relationship with death and dying.
Wow. Beautiful. Well said. Did that come off the top?
I have it. You have a sticker on my laptop, so I was actually kind of reading it on the sticker.
That's great. So where are you headed with the foundation right now? Where are you at in your goals and along the process line since we haven't spoken in a few months? So we're interested to know where you're at along the lines because I know it's a lot of work that you put into this.
Yeah, we are fundraising currently and doing public education and talking events. So Amber had an event in LA this weekend and I can't remember what it was called, but it was something this weekend that was great. It was awesome. And then I did something at the library not too long ago and Sandy out in Maryland, she drove out to Pennsylvania for the Support the Mooter Museum thing. So we're kind of doing little educational things right now as we're driving people to support our Patreon or buy soaps from us. That Patreon link, by the way, is patreon.com/bigsleepproductions.
Wow. How could you forget that? Tell us a little bit about the soap then. What is the soap and how is that in connection to what you have going at the end?
Well, ideally we'd like to make our own soap someday with the critters that inhabit our conservation burial park. But until then, we are working with a local supplier to me to create our soaps, and then we're giving them fun little funerary names like Adipocere and Death Positive for the puppy shampoo, which is phenomenal, by the way. That's my favorite one. What else? Spirituality. That one's got green tea leaves in it. It's super awesome. So
that's amazing. Very cool. Very cool. So what are, after you're going through this fundraising and awareness round, what is the route that happens after that? As far as where you are, I think you mentioned previously that you're looking to get that property and that's like the next big daunting task that's on the list.
Yeah. So, as I move into a larger office space, we'll be able to offer human care when I can install refrigeration, expand refrigeration to take care of humans and get a different vehicle for that. And then the next step is moving on to being able to provide burial services. So I think that's really going to be more of a surprise. Here's some land kind of a thing. So it'll happen when it happens. And in the meantime, we're going to keep pumping out content and education just so we can like help in our own little way.
Absolutely.
Oop, that's a death call here. Hold on just a second. All right, I think the students got it. I'm sorry about that. You know, we've been seeing a lot more business come in ever since we started mortuary marketing. And I got to tell you, all the funeral homes we work with, they're saying the same thing. So what do? We run ads on Google and other similar sites that get directed at families that need a funeral home in your area. It then brings them to a page that we've designed for you that gets the family to call you to inquire for your services. It's really increased our volume big time. It's working for my funeral home, and I think most parlors could really benefit from its uses. I put a bunch of information in the podcast description. Go check it out. I'm always happy to help talk with you and answer any questions you might have. All right, let's get back to our morbid discussion.
And how are things are going on the animal care side? Have you seen some success with that and helping families in that way?
Yes. So my drive in doing that was I felt like if I want to educate people on how to take care of their humans at end of life, let's get to their pets first. So we have way more pet deaths in a lifetime than we do our people deaths. Sure. So by introducing these newer methods and more hands-on and just giving people permission to be involved, it kind of segues into the translation to care for maybe their people later as to what they feel comfortable doing.
Yeah.
So it's just it's a segue, but it's a necessary segue because I think that's a big thing that especially family-owned firms are missing out on. You can partner with an existing crematory that cares for pets and still give that continuum of care to the client family. Yeah. So
absolutely.
There's another idea.
I think that's a fantastic thing for other firms, because like you said, Melissa, you're going through most people, if you do have animals or pets, you're going through those losses a little bit more frequently. And what better way to establish a relationship with a family than to go through that? I was actually talking to one of my friends or someone else recently, and we were talking about losing, you know, a pet, which is everyone knows is a very, very tough, challenging thing. But someone had a great point saying that is, as terrible as it sounds, that's kind of a warm-up act almost for when you do go through those real losses. And it sounds terrible, but honestly, it is a good way for you to get accustomed with the grieving process and what you're going to do in those situations. And I think that if we look at it from that point of view, a funeral home should be like, well, of course we should be involved with helping with people's pets because we want to be there for them when they're going through any type of loss. So that's just my two cents on that, I guess.
It's brilliant.
brilliant. Okay, so that's going to be it for us today. We learned a ton about all sorts of animals and how we can get involved with our funeral homes. Same with the End Foundation. You got to check them out. And how we can pair with other maybe crematories. So there's a lot of actionable steps that we can have as funeral directors. And we'd just like to thank you, Melissa, for all the work that you do and for being here with us and having a nice chit chat with all of us at the Mortuary Show here today.
Yes. Oh, give me an update on your pup. What's going on?
Oh, my pup. Well, ours.
I saw online.
Yes, that's my sister's dog. And that was more of just like a cute.
It's going to be a visitor.
Quote unquote. A cute visitor of the funeral home.
Oh, so sweet.
Yeah, he's a beautiful boy.
I can totally see y'all having one like that, though.
Yeah, I know. I have my own dog. She is very excitable. She is not bomb proof. Let's just say she's the sweetest little thing, but she always wants to play. She's very energetic and I don't know if her mentality is exactly what I need. Maybe down the road when she, maybe settles a little bit. But at the moment, Miss Lottie is a very excitable pup for sure.
awesome.
But anything else? Anything else for us, Melissa?
Not currently, no. That's okay. It. Just okay. Making the dream happen.
Yes, that's what it's all about. You got to take the steps. You got to work at it every day, just like we all do. We're all making a difference in the world in our own special way. And we do appreciate you and everything that you do.
Thank you. You too. I wish there had been funeral homes like y'all's 10 years ago.
Thank you.
The education and the knowledge and the fun activities.
We're trying to push for it. So that's what it's all about.
You're doing amazing stuff. Thank you so much.
Thank you.